Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast about homebrew electronics and amateur radio. This is a program for people who like to melt solder and build their own rigs. For other episodes of the program, go to www.soldersmoke.com. For the latest Solder Smoke news, go to soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Please send feedback to n2cqr@yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
All right. Good afternoon. It's Sunday, the 28th of February, 2010, and this is Solder Smoke 122. All right, I'm prepared to open with some travelogue here, but it's going to be a travelogue from outside Italy. I'll give you a little bit of Italy travelogue here. We had a snowstorm. You know, I know people in the States, in the Northeast especially, have been really struggling with the snow this winter. And, well, we got a little bit of it here in Rome. On the 12th of February, it snowed in Rome. This is highly unusual. It really hasn't snowed here since 1986, and it's treated as a real special event. My kids, of course, were delighted. Maria at one point declared that it was the greatest day of her life. But they all ran outside. It started snowing just as the kids were going off to school. Big, wet, heavy snowflakes came coming down, and it actually stuck, as we used to say in New York. And it didn't stick for long, but for a while we got a chance to look at Rome under a very beautiful snow cover. And it was beautiful. It was unusual. And so these pictures now will be featured, will be showing up in restaurants and other places for years to come. The big snow of 2010, great fun. The kids went to school, and they tell me that they launched a petition to the school administration so that they would be allowed to go out and play around in it. And the principal wisely agreed, and off they went. So the big Roman snow of 12 February 2010, great fun. The real big travelogue news, though, guys, is what I'm going to tell you about now. I'm late. I'm usually doing these shows early in the morning, but I had to sleep in yesterday because we got in late last night on a trip. We were 1 week up in the old smoke, up in London, up in the UK. My kids were off last week. They have the vacation that's intended to send the youngsters, and I think primarily their parents, off to ski resorts. We don't ski. We're not skiers. So we decided to go north, but to London instead. We went back to our old home in the UK, the great city of London. And I tell you, we had a really fantastic trip. Most of it was catching up with old friends from the kids' school, their friends and parents who we met through the school. And it was really a wonderful trip. We went back to a lot of the museums. We went to the Natural History Museum, the Science Museum. We went to the British Museum because the kids are, Maria's studying the ancient Egyptians and Billy's studying the Middle Ages and the Crusades. So there was a lot of culture. We went down, we saw a show, Wicked, and I recommend it. It is a musical, but, well... It was a lot of fun, and it had to do with the Wizard of Oz, and so anyway, it gets a Solder Smoke recommendation. What else did we do? All kinds of things. Billy and I, at one point, one morning, were left to our own devices. Elisa went back to visit her old school in London, and Maria was off spending a day at her old school, so Billy and I... We're left alone, and we decided to do some radio explorations. We were staying in a part of London, a really nice part of London, called Bayswater, which is just north of Kensington Gardens, Hyde Park, that part of town that's just north of the main park in London. And I knew that this was the area where Marconi stayed when he went to London as a very young guy with his new invention called the radio. His mother had taken him to London because she felt it was the best place for him to get patent protection for his new invention. Now, they were concerned that the Italians might not give him a patent, and if they did, it might not afford the most effective protection, as I understand it. So anyway, off they went. The mother, Marconi's mother, was from Britain and had good family connections there. And off they went, and they stayed for the 2 years that they were there. They stayed in a house in Bayswater, and it's now adorned with a blue plaque. And for those of you who don't know London, blue plaques are all over the city, and they mark the place where somebody important or famous lived. And so Marconi's house in Bayswater is marked with a blue plaque. Billy and I looked it up on the internet, got the address. Off we went. It was only about a 5-minute walk from where we were staying, and there it is. We're going to have Billy shot a video of me approaching the house that Marconi stayed in. We'll get that up on the blog as soon as we can. Took a lot of pictures of the blue plaque, and it was just kind of neat to finally visit the area that young Marconi stayed when he came to London with his new radio. Then we continued on our radio theme that morning, and we went back down to a very important street in London called Queensway, and because we spotted on the way out to Marconi's house a Maplin's. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, guys. Maplin's or Maplin's? I guess it depends on which side of the Atlantic you're from. We'll say it British, Maplin's. Anyway, it's the UK equivalent of the U.S. Radio Shack. And I think in a way similar to Radio Shack, it's gotten a bit away from being a component kind of a radio parts, knackish kind of place to being a bit more appliance-oriented. But I was still impressed. We found some good parts in there. Billy bought himself another laser, which he claims works much better than the ones he's had earlier. I managed to find an assortment of resistors and an assortment of capacitors and a whole bunch of little other odds and ends that you can't get very easily here in Rome. So I considered it a big win. We put all the parts in the backpack, and off we went. Next stop, Michael Faraday's lab. Gentlemen, you can still visit Michael Faraday's workshop. It's in the Royal Institution, not to be confused with the Royal Society. The Royal Institution was much more of a common man's, working man's kind of scientific establishment. An amazing place. They've worked on it. They were working on it during my last 2 years in London, so I didn't get to see the final results. But Billy and I went there and visited the museum. If you're in London, don't miss it. It's a great place it's a great museum all around, but especially for people with the knack, people interested in electronics and the history of radio, because they preserved Michael Faraday's lab down in the servants' quarters in the same place it was, and you can see it. It's now behind glass, but you can see all the projects he was working on, and they have a lot of his apparatus and original inventions were there. I saw the first transformer ever built, the very first electrical transformer, and some of you guys will be surprised. It was a toroidal transformer. It was a toroid. Apparently, Faraday had the idea that you needed to have it in circular form. He didn't realize that wasn't necessary to get the transformer action. But anyway, the first one was built toroidal style, I guess about 5 or 6 inches across, and I think the core was iron. We went up after we visited the workshop, which was really great. We went upstairs, and you know, the Royal Institution is where they gave these lectures, these very important lectures, in which the great men of science would explain and present their inventions and theories and ideas and their work. And these were great events, and Michael Faraday and many of the other real great luminaries of British and world science made their presentations in this theater room at the Royal Institution. And it's open to the public. I mean, it's part of the museum. You walk in, it's completely free. You get to roam around, you get to look at Faraday's workshop, And then you just pop upstairs and you could go into this really historically important theater. So Billy and I were the only ones in there. And so we took turns standing at the podium and pretending that we were presenting a scientific breakthrough of one sort. And then we took pictures of each other sitting up in the stands, you know, looking intensely interested and thoughtful. Great stuff. Anyway, I really recommend it. Okay, so that was during the week. The highlight, by far the highlight of the whole UK trip for me, this was the highlight of a really amazing trip. On Friday, I got together. I went out to Kent, to Dover, to visit the headquarters of the famed Dover Construction Club. You guys have been hearing about this and reading about it on the Solder Smoke blog and hearing about it in the podcast. But this is a really great group of knack victims, members of the International Brotherhood of Electronic Wizards, and all around fine business hams and great guys. Tony, G4WIF of GQRP Club, very kindly picked me up at a train station east of London and drove me all the way out through the beautiful Kent countryside out to the headquarters of the Dover Construction Club, which is at the home of Ian, G3ROO. You know, Ian, G3ROO is really a towering figure in QRP and homebrew land. Both he and Tony are members of the QRP Hall of Fame. Great guys, and wow, they've already done so much for the hobby and are in the process of doing so much more. We were met out there by a fellow who I feel certain will someday join Tony and Ian in the Hall of Fame. It may be a bit further down the road because he's a relative newcomer, but Nigel, M0NDE, was there and took advantage of a day off to join us, and I was really pleased. Nigel and I have been corresponding for a long time. Nigel is the fella who has a job that takes him to both ends of the Channel Tunnel, and he gets to work, I think, several days each week on the French side and several days on the UK side. So I joked with him that he was just a natural to be a member of the International Brotherhood of Electronic Wizards, and Nigel has made friends with radio amateurs on both sides of that important bit of geography that is the English Channel. Guys, you want to talk about a kind of dream facility. You know, recently we've been featuring pictures of shacks from around the world. But I got to tell you, I can't imagine a better set of workshops or just a more friendly, better set of facilities for a construction-oriented radio club than that provided to the Dover Club by ENG3ROO. We're talking not one shack, multiple shacks. Not one workshop, multiple workshops. And it was almost too much to take in. I mean, you just started. The first place we visited was Ian's up in the attic shack that is focused on and devoted to military radio equipment, and lately especially clandestine military radio equipment. You guys know what I'm talking about. The Parasets, and then Ian has a setup there called the B2 suitcase radio that was used during World War II in the struggle against the Nazis. Brave people took these devices behind enemy lines and risked their lives to communicate back to London. And hams all over the world have taken an interest in these kind of rigs. I think the interest is especially acute and especially appropriate in the UK, since these rigs were a vital part of the effort to protect England and the rest of Britain from invasion. And so when we walked into the shack, Ian had set up and operating his suitcase radio, and he gave me the chance to call CQ on 80 meters using this rig. And I used my old UK call, M0HBR, and it was a real thrill to grab that little telegraph key and send out a CQ. Great fun. He's got an amazing key collection, including the most unusual telegraph key that I've ever seen. And this one, we got a picture of it. I'm going to put it up on the blog. I think you guys will get a real kick out of it. It's a key, and it's got a spark gap in it. But it's the spark gap is completely enclosed, and there's a little window in which you can peer through to see the spark action. And they kind of quizzed me to see if I could figure out what it would be used for, and I could not. And finally, Ian laughed and told me that it is a spark key that had been designed for use on hydrogen balloons. Man, you want to talk about a tough job for a radio operator. All right, there you go. Spark radio operator on a hydrogen balloon, I guess on the dirigibles. That would have been a tough gig. That you'd really need to max out the insurance if you had that job. Anyway, great fun to see that. We went down to his main operating room downstairs. By the window, you could look out and you could see a really impressive antenna farm. Then it was out to the back into the complex out in the back. And this is where the construction club gets together each Thursday. I've already had some pictures of it up on the blog. I don't think those pictures really do it justice. It's something to behold. And you could see that the great environment provided by Ian's workshop complex is resulting in really an amazing output from the other construction club members. Nigel, for example, has built a really beautiful loop antenna, and he showed me his allotted portion of the workbench real estate there, and he's got a number of really great projects going along. I just was thinking when I was out there, this is sort of the ultimate shack, the ultimate shed. I mean, sometimes these places are referred to, I think, kind of scornfully as man caves. I think shed or shack is better. They've got a wood-burning stove, guys, and while we were out there, Ian wanted to keep it comfortable, so he grabbed a log and threw it in the wood-burning stove. All the tools you need are out there. And it's surrounded out in the backyard by kind of, parallel efforts. Ian has set up like a mobile setup, a little trailer, which is perfect for taking up to a mountaintop or to a coastal place where you could throw out an antenna and in great comfort sit there and enjoy the countryside and look around and operate whatever rig you're using. Great stuff. Guys, get this. Ian had a spark rig. I mean, it was appropriate. It was a beautiful piece of old radio technology. But he's got a spark rig in the living room. I remember thinking that his XYL just must be a very understanding person. We had a chance to meet her, and it was wonderful to meet her. And I just thought, what a patient person she is to allow a spark rig in the living room. Ian, who used to work, used to go to sea as a radioman, told us that he had made actually it wasn't supposed to. It was after Spark had supposedly been phased out, but he was on one ship in which there was a spark rig, and he couldn't resist, and he made at least one contact. I think I can say this, guys, because the statute of limitations is probably over. But Ian G3ROO did make one contact using spark from a ship at sea. Very, very cool. Also very cool is Ian's place is just filled with radio history. He showed me a little book, and I kind of knew what it was because it was right next to the spark rig, so I kind of had an idea. And sure enough, he opened it up, and the book opens up, and it's a fake book, and what it conceals inside is a crystal radio receiver, just a little holder for the chunk of galena, the cat's whisker, a little coil there to tune it, and a place where you can hook up your earphones, disguised as a book. And this is a very British very English humor. The author of the book, and you'll see a picture of this on the blog soon. The author, Mr. E.R. Phone. Hey, what a great trip. It was really good to see Tony and Ian and Nigel, and great special thanks to all of them for taking time out to show me around. I really got a kick out of it. I'm sorry I didn't see others. There were a number of other people that I wanted to see when I was out there. I once again missed Hans Summers, and I feel bad about that. Hans and I seem to be kind of doomed to not cross paths, but one of these days we'll get together. But I did have, of course, a lot of kind of family commitments, and you know, had to spend wanted to spend a lot of time taking the kids around, showing them the sights of their old home, because when they were there last, they were considerably younger and not really able to take it in. So it was that was really the priority in this trip. But I'm really glad I got a chance to get out there to Kent and to Dover to see the club. It was great to be back in the UK. London especially, just one of the world's great cities. I know a lot of people have mixed feelings about big cities like London and New York. I guess it helps to have lived there, because we did live there for 4 years, so we went into it very much as sort of Londoners, and as a result had a really great week. But what a wonderful place and wonderful country, wonderful city, and we definitely felt very much at home back there. Thanks to everybody. Thanks to Ian, Nigel, and Tony for a really great visit. All right, that's the travelogue. How's that for some radio travelogue? Great stuff. All right, now I got a whole bunch of stuff I wanted to talk to you about here. Just sort of our normal solder smoke stuff to catch up on. Let's see. Oh, Whisper. Yeah, lots of other new developments on Whisper here. I put something up on the blog about this. I've been kind of feeling guilty because I've been transmit mode only on Whisper, and I think I may be one of the few stations in the world that's doing that, that's only transmitting. Somehow it just doesn't seem right. You know what I'm saying? It, you know, if you're a radio amateur, you pretty much have to have both a transmitter and a receiver. So I started feeling guilty about this, and I started thinking there's got to be a way for me to participate in the Whisper receive effort. And so I was sitting there, and I figured, oh, what the heck, let's try it. I'll try receiving Whisper signals with my Drake 2B. Now the Drake 2B that I have here, my beloved Drake 2B that I have owned since 1973, it's almost like a line out of the Grateful Dead song, "What a Long Strange Trip It's Been." This receiver has been used for purposes never envisioned by the designers out there in Miamisburg, Ohio, at the RL Drake Company. I've used it for satellite communications. After a down converter, it's been used for VHF communications, all kinds of other applications. Whisper, however, might be one of its strangest uses. And I just took the audio out of the headphones jack and put it into the audio in on the sound card on my Tekra 8100 Linux-based computer. Adjusted the audio levels, and then the critical part is getting the thing right on frequency. That was a bit of a chore, but it can be done, and I got it there, and then all of a sudden I started noticing that I was receiving and decoding Whisper signals. So I uploaded them to the database. I have participated now in the worldwide Whisper receive effort, and I did it with a Drake 2B. So I thought you guys would like to hear about that. It was great fun to do. I don't know whether it'd be practical. The Drake 2B does drift a little bit, and you don't have to drift too much on Whisper to be out of the band. The entire band is only, I think, 200 or 300 hertz wide. So just a little bit of a drift or one little bump on the table, and you could be out of the band. But for a while, anyway, I received Whisper signals and reported them, and I got an article about this up on the blog. I was pleased that I picked up one really low power signal out of Germany, and you'll see the details on the blog entry on that if you're interested. Hey, a movie review. We occasionally do movie reviews here, and this one gets the coveted 5 soldering iron rating. 5 soldering irons to the movie Up by the brilliant guys at Pixar, including our friend Mark K6HX of the Brainwagon blog. I know you got a lot of you guys read Brainwagon blog. Mark does a great job there. He definitely has the knack. And in his professional life, he works at Pixar and worked on the movie Up, which I thought was just fantastic. Maria and I watched it here on DVD. Great stuff. If you haven't seen it, go ahead. It's an uplifting experience, no pun intended. Great stuff. Really liked it. Thanks to Mark and the guys at Pixar for doing that. My last Sutter Smoke, we talked about my computer woes. I was in a bad place with the computers back in early February, but I'm happy to report that all is well. All of my problems have been resolved, and life is good in the computer area here in Trastevere, Rome, Italy, at least in my shack. Jorge in Georgia has been helping me out a great deal with my Linux problems. He's really been a big support here. KI4SGU, I have his QSL right here. Great guy, great member of the International Brotherhood of Electronic Wizards. And with his help, I managed to sort out the problems with the Tikra 8100. I think part of it was a loose connection. I went out onto the web and I saw that in discussions about this particular computer, there were hints there that some of the connections between the boards and some of the kind of the strip line connectors inside the computer could get a little bit loose. So I went in there and tightened them up. I put a new hard drive in there. And those two steps, man, this thing is humming. I take back all the bad things I said about Linux and Ubuntu Linux. Jaunty Jackalope is just jumping along here. And the computer, even though it's ancient, I think, by computers in the computer time frame, it works just fine. Does all kinds of exciting stuff for me. I use it. It generates my whisper signals. I use it for surfing the web and all kinds of other things. I use it for updating the blog spot, the Sutter Smoke blog page. Great stuff. And thanks very much to Jorge for helping me out with this project. This is really, really an interesting one. Bob Crane, W8SX, was over here late summer, early fall. And afterwards, he alerted me to a program that was played on public radio station KWMA in Bolinas, California. I think it's somewhere out there in California. I'm not sure exactly where KWMA is. I think I'm pretty sure it's in the Bay Area. But the program was put together by somebody who I remember from days when I was really, really focused on old boat anchor radios. It's somebody that in the boat anchors community that's really well known and well liked. It's Dick Dillman. Dick put together a radio show for the public radio station KWMA about the Point Ray and Bolinas commercial telegraph station KPH. And anyway, there are I think two programs there, part one and part two. Part one really deals with radio history, and part two is more focused, I think, if I recall correctly, on the station KPH. But Dick does a great job in really talking about the mystery and romance of radio. He talks about the things that you could hear as a shortwave listener. I mean, this program, I think, is aimed at people who are not necessarily into radio yet. And if the intention was to lure them in, Dick did a wonderful job. And he talks about some of the things that you could hear on the shortwave bands, including the Sky King transmissions, the numbers station, including the Lincolnshire Poacher, all kinds of great stuff. I have the link to it on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. It's about a 45-minute program. Guys, edit, put it on your MP3 player. You'll really be glad you did. I've gotten amazingly good feedback on this. People really love this show, and I think all of you will really enjoy it. So anyway, take a look. Find that on the blog and put it on your MP3 player or have it playing when you're working around the shack. I think it's really good, kind of easy listening for radio electronic home brewers. All right. One thing I wanted to mention, this is, I guess, the astronomical portion of today's program. We recently passed an anniversary. I think it's the 50th anniversary of the transmission by Frank Drake to extraterrestrials. You guys know about this. Let me look here at the article here. Yeah, this comes from that wonderful magazine, The New Scientist. And it says here, the founder of Project Ozma kickstarted the search for extraterrestrial intelligence or extraterrestrial life just 50 years ago. We're talking about Project Ozma. And in 1957, Frank Drake was studying the Pleiades star clusters at Harvard University's Radio Observatory. He writes, on one occasion we saw an added feature in the data. It turned out to be an amateur radio enthusiast near the observatory, but at the time I thought we had detected clear evidence of another civilization. Well, in a certain way you did, Frank. But he goes on, you feel a very strong emotion that you never felt otherwise. It's a combination of elation and excitement and the sense that everything we know is going to change. So he says here, anyway, there's discussion of 50 years of Project Ozma and the efforts. Frank is still at it. I didn't realize this, but he is still at it. He is the director of the Carl Sagan Center at the SETI Institute in California. He's the founder of Project Ozma, a search for intelligent radio signals from Tau Ceti and Epsilon Eridani. So anyway, three cheers for Frank Drake, and the search continues for what I'm sure we'll agree is the ultimate DX. I guess this is a week where we're going to have sort of a couple of rock and roll references here. But as I was reading this article about Frank Drake at Virgin Radio out of London, which I listened to here in the shack some mornings, happened to be playing David Bowie, and there was a line just as I was reading this, a line from an old Bowie song, "There's a star man waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he knows he'd blow our minds." Indeed. Frank Drake sent out the first signal intended to communicate with extraterrestrials, and after he did it, he received quite a bit of criticism from scientists who questioned whether this was a good idea. it may be best for us to remain kind of ignored and unnoticed, especially if the extraterrestrials are of the really kind of scary and unpleasant variety. Anyway, we'll see. I mentioned Whisper on the Drake 2B. For a while there, when I was in the land of computer pain, I wasn't doing any whispering, because you can't do any whispering if your computers aren't working. But once I got the computer problems resolved, let me finish the story about the computers. Okay, so the loose connections were resolved on the Tekra, and I actually got a flat screen monitor to replace the roadkill monitors that I had here in the shack. Got rid of them today, took them out to the dump. The roadkill monitors are now gone. No more CRTs here in the shack. It's all flat screen, and I must say, better, nicer. Bought one of these little computer monitor switches so I can switch back and forth between my old Windows machine and the other Ubuntu computer here in the shack. So we're making great progress in the computer area. Anyway, as I was saying, when the computers were down, there was no way to whisper. So I went back to QRSS, visual mode, because all you need really to generate that signal is your little K1 EL keyer that's been programmed for QRSS and a little QRP transmitter. Off I went. And so for a couple of weeks there, I was whispering and looking for my signals on the QRSS grabber. It was great fun, and it was good to get back back into whispering. But now the computers came back, and once the computers came back, I went back to whisper. I must admit, I mean, I know this is a bit kind of a kind of controversial, a bit of a sore point. Oops, dropping stuff here. Whether you should whisper or whether you should QRSS, I think there's room for both, but I kind of prefer the whispering thing. So I went back and fired up the laptop, got the whisper going, and would leave it on for a while. And, you know, I discovered something really interesting, that on 30 meters, with my little 20 milliwatt double sideband signal, the band usually closes with a thud very suddenly as soon as the sun goes down over Europe. Pretty much all day long, I'll be getting picked up by stations in Northern Europe. If the band is short, there are stations kind of in the center of Germany that are getting my signal out to about 800 kilometers. As the band goes a little bit long, all the spots will start coming in from stations that are out there at 1,100, 1,200 kilometers. And then when the sun goes down, boom, it's dead. Dead as a doornail. Nobody's getting me. But lately, something strange has been happening. I'll get up in the morning and I'll take a look at the readout from the Whisper database to see who's been picking me up. And instead of having all the spots stopping at sunset and then resuming right around sunrise, as has been the case for many months now, lately there have been a number of incidents, a number of nights in which I've been getting received all night long. There seems to be one station in Norway, LA3JJ, that we have this pipeline, and there have been a couple of nights where almost every single one of my transmissions, every 2 minutes, LA3JJ is picking up my little 20 milliwatt whisper beacon. And he's at a distance of 1,943 kilometers. So that's obviously one F-layer hop, but all night long. And so it's been a really interesting experience for me, because every time this happens, and it's happened, I guess, three or four nights now, I will immediately go to the spaceweather.com website, really good website, you guys should check it out, to see what has been happening on the sun that might explain this enhanced communication. And sure enough, just about every time I've gone there, I've been able to find either a solar flare or a solar filament or some other solar event that explains the increase in ionization in the F layer that led to this odd pipeline kind of experience. Now, why it should be for one station and not multiple stations, I really haven't quite figured out. It may be that many of the stations on 30 meters are shutting down at night. So it may be just that LA3JJ may be one of the few stations monitoring through the night on 30 meters, because I think guys have become so accustomed to the band shutting down. But it's very interesting. It's fun to use your little whisper system almost as a kind of a solar event detector, and then to follow up on your discovery by taking a look and seeing what was actually taking place up on the sun that might explain the phenomenon that you'd observe. So anyway, I've been having a lot of fun with that, and I hope that talking about this gets more of you involved in Whisper. It's really a great thing. As I was talking to Tony and Ian and Nigel out in Dover, and we all agreed that it'll never replace real ham radio two-way communications, but it's an interesting and useful adjunct. So anyway, that's my recent experiences with Whisper. An event coming up. This is really exciting. I didn't realize this was happening. The Massachusetts QRP Convention, 13 March. Mark your calendars if you're up there in the Northeast. 13 March, the Massachusetts QRP Convention. Listen to this. This is exciting. Some of the featured speakers include Michael Rainey, Alpha Alpha One, Tango Juliet, the Poet Laureate of QRP, the Hero of the Hobbit Hole, the Code Talker, the voice-powered wonder of the amateur bands. He's going to be one of the speakers there. So, wow, that's not to miss. And I mean, equally good. K1JT, Joe Taylor, Nobel Prize winner and creator of Whisper, is going to be there speaking. Solder Smoke will have a correspondent on site. Mark NX1K has agreed to be the Solder Smoke correspondent for this event, and I've asked him to grab some audio and try to get some interviews. So through Solder Smoke, you too can have at least a virtual presence at the Massachusetts QRP convention. Stay tuned. Here's something else we've been working on. Paul, NA5N, another of the true greats of ham radio, of QRP, a while back wrote an article for the 2002 Atlanticon convention, and it was called A Handyman's Guide to QRP Transmitters. And it didn't get nearly as wide a circulation as it deserves, because Tony Fishpool and I both agree that this is really a special article, and we've been urging Paul to finish up a revision on it and get it out to the ham radio community. I think we're close. Paul's got a lot of irons in the fire, and he's had some things he really had to take care of lately, so we completely understand that he hasn't been able to really devote a lot of time to this, but we think we're getting close. And so I know a number of guys have been asking about this. Stay tuned, stand by. Hopefully, pretty soon we'll have an updated Handyman's Guide ready for those guys out there who, like me, really need a Handyman's Guide to QRP transmitters. I'd recently received, talking about literature, recently received the latest edition of QRP Quarterly. Great stuff, full of really good technical information in there, and I put up a little review on it on the blog. Check it out. I think you guys will like it. Another thing that's been on the blog that people seem to really like is we've been publishing a lot of pictures of workbenches and some amazing workbench pictures out there. And you know, guys, you really seem to like these pictures almost a bit too much. But I get really I get a sense of what articles on the blog people like and listen to and talk about, and these have been among the most popular. And as a matter of fact, one of our listeners, Roger, I think Roger is in somewhere in Benelux, wrote, and he just, his whole reaction was summed up by three words and an exclamation mark. This is porn. All right. Well, I guess for the knack afflicted, it could be considered a form of kind of pornography. But anyway, we know what you're saying there, Roger. All right, guys. That brings us to
Solder Smoke Mailbag.
Indeed. Yeah. Here we are, mailbag. I've been having some email exchanges with our good friend Mike's wife Jackie up in Alaska, and she seems to be doing very well and getting along just fine. I just wanted to pass that along to the group. I sent her up a copy of Solder Smoke, the book. I know she'd like to have it because of its, you know, because of all the discussions of Mike KL7R, but also because Jackie is herself interested in ham radio, and I thought that it would be useful for her, both for sentimental and for technical reasons. So we sent Jackie up the book, and I hope she enjoys it. Kind of on a similar sad note, you know, we recently had the passing of one of the greats of ham radio and QRP, Dave Ingram. And I think I mentioned this on, I discussed my QSO with Dave on a previous Solder Smoke. I had just built a little QRP 30 meter transceiver. We were back in Virginia and it wasn't quite working right, but I got on the air, and the one station I worked was Dave Ingram, and it was a real hoot. And I got to tell him over the air about how inspired I had been by his radio articles, especially in CQ magazine. And I think, you know, sometimes you could tell, even through CW, you could tell if somebody's been really kind of pleased by what you said. And the code came back a little bit faster, and I could tell that he had been moved by working a rig that he, in part, had inspired. So we recently lost Dave. Corey, WA3UVV, sent me a very nice message, and he asked me to remind everybody that we should take every opportunity we can to thank those who have inspired and helped us in ham radio, and that's good advice indeed. So thanks for that, Corey. Ted, AJ8T, writes to point out that there's, for those who are working on soft rock or SDR projects in the soft rock community, some enhanced documentation for these projects is now available. Check it out. Andrew, G4CWX, wrote in, sent me some good advice on Solder Smoke, the book. Andrew is a very accomplished author, both in the technical area and recently with fiction. So I really appreciated his advice and words of wisdom there, and edits. Thanks very much, Andrew, and Solder Smoke, the book, is better for your input. Thank you. Chris, KD4PBJ, points out that he, too, carries with him ham radio literature when out and about, and he points out that there have been a number of incidents in which people have sort of looked over his shoulder, seen what he is reading, and have recognized him as a radio amateur, and have started up a nice conversations there. He's been spotted in public with QRP Quarterly and QRP Classics. QRP Classics, one of my favorite QRP books. It's a shame it's out of print, but if you get a chance, get a hold of that one, because it is definitely a good one. Let's see. I got a nice message from Paul, N8XMS. Paul bought Solder Smoke, the book, and I should have told him about this, but I guess I just didn't get around to it. But I included in the book a quote from Paul in which he described his experiences as a young new ham repairing his AT1 transmitter, and how the successful repair had made him feel like a true radio amateur. And that repair story really just captured for me a lot of the essence of the knack. And I included it in the book, and Paul was reading along in the book, and he said he was enjoying it very much, and then he was really shocked to turn the page and find his own story there. So pleasantly surprised, he said. And so I'm glad you saw that, Paul. I'm glad you liked the book too. Nick, VK2DAP, is putting together an old boat anchor. Putting an old boat anchor receiver on Whisper. He's using an HRO 500. Good luck with that, Nick. We may start a new, really esoteric aspect of the hobby, boat anchors on whispers. Whispering boat anchors. Dave, W2DAB, thinks that he has only half a knack. And I don't know why you think you only have half the knack. David, you sounds to me like you got the full-fledged illness here. He talked about a project in which he was fixing a sticky permeability-tuned oscillator. David, if you're fixing a permanent permeability-tuned oscillator, a PTO, I mean, I think you got the knack right there. I think that's a sure sign. Most people wouldn't even know what a PTO is, much less how to fix one or a sticky one. So congratulations, David. Embrace the knack. You certainly have it. Michael, N1FBZ, wrote asking about a beacon that he hears on around 3.7 megahertz transmitting the letter P, just constantly transmitting the letter P. I hadn't heard that one, but I told him it sounds Russian to me. I know the Russians, there are Russian CW beacons just transmitting a single Morse letter on 40. I hear them all the time. I hadn't heard them down on 80. Michael was using the SDR receiver in the Netherlands. So it's likely to me, it seems likely to me that this is some sort of Russian beacon on 80 meters. If anybody can confirm that, let me know and I'll pass it on to Michael. Peter, a G4UJG, really liked the show, and he independently came across these wonderful shack pictures of W9EVT. We had the pictures of OMEVT on the blog. This guy has the ultimate shack. I mean, just you'll those of you who saw it will remember. Just, I mean, you want to talk about radio eye candy. This guy's shack is pretty much the max. And there's some more pictures on the QRZ.com page. So if you guys haven't gotten quite enough kind of radio eye candy this week and you want to indulge, I guess what Roger would call in more radio porn, do a search for QRZ.com for Whiskey 9 Echo Victor Tango. Great stuff. Beautiful pictures. What an amazing shack. Jonathan, KB1KIX, longtime listener and supporter with a great website and blog, has on his blog some links to historical information, historical documents from the ITU conventions going way back to the earliest days of radio. Good stuff there. Really interesting. And those of you who are interested in the ham history will get a... We'll find this to be a real treasure trove resource. Plus, you know, Jonathan's got all kinds of great technical info on his site. Very creative. You could find it really easily. Just Google KB1KIX, and the blog is KB1KIX.net. Check it out. I think you'll really like it. Got a very, very heartwarming email from Antoine, F8CKH. Antoine definitely has one of the dream jobs for NAC victims, the kind of job that those of us who are teenage kind of solder melters and technically oriented kids dreamed about. Antoine's job, he's a pilot, he flies 747s and Airbuses. He flies the big rigs. And he wrote and said that he, in part, I guess, from listening to Solder Smoke, got more interested in simple homebrew QRP radio. He's selling all of his commercial gear. He's going completely cold turkey into the NAC, and he's going to build his entire station homebrew QRP. And Antoine didn't mention this, but I just got the sense that, you know, we all need a break from work. And I guess if your work is operating a Boeing 747, which I guess in a certain sense is the maximum QRO rig, right? Well, I guess a good way to take a break after a long day at that very very high-powered office would be to indulge in a little real QRP, low-power, simple circuitry, two or three transistor rig construction. So, Antoine, we hear you, we understand, and glad to hear that you're enjoying the show. Finally, Steve, G0FUW, our man in Bath, announces that they've got a new contest going out there. You know, I'm not big on contests, and I suspect that most of you guys probably feel the same way about it, but the one that Steve and his friends out there in Bath are putting together sounds really interesting because it encourages the use of homebrew equipment, and Steve thinks that they may get up to 30 new homebrewed DSB rigs on the air. So that's the kind of contest that could I guess, win some supporters in the NAC homebrew community. Good luck with that, Steve, and thanks for sharing the info. I have more info on it on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. All right, guys, that's about it for this week. I'll just end by saying that if you haven't picked up the Solder Smoke book, you know, please do so. Lulu.com has it available. And also, let me remind you guys, and this is one of the very few bits of fashion advice that you'll ever get from this podcast, because God knows I'm not in a position to offer any fashion advice to anybody. But, you know, Hamfest season is rapidly approaching, and you will be out there with your fellow radio amateurs. And I think this might be the appropriate moment for you to ask yourself the question. The question is, what will I wear? What kind of statement will you be making about you, about yourself as a radio amateur, when you step into the hallowed halls and hallowed parking lots of those ham fests that are on the horizon? I think you could really make the kind of statement that you're interested in by going dressed in one of the very high quality t-shirts or amateur radio baseball caps offered at the Solder Smoke Cafe Press website. It's not too late to order. The prices have been dramatically reduced. You can get your hats, you can get your t-shirts, sweatshirts, coffee mugs, beer steins, and bumper stickers. Bumper stickers are very important. You can really get some, you know, some sentiments that we can all identify with are available in those bumper stickers, such as "my other car was completely homebrewed from junk box parts," or "you could take my soldering iron when you peel away my cold dead fingers." That one recently has proven to be quite popular in the state of Texas. Anyway, check out the Cafe Press site. If you want to find it, just go to the blog page, soldersmoke.blogspot.com. In the upper left, you'll see a coffee mug. Click on the coffee mug, and you'll be taken right into the Solder Smoke virtual shopping mall. And the book is, of course, still on sale. And you can help us out at all times by beginning your Amazon shopping experience by going in through the link on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. Hey, guys, thanks a lot. Hope you enjoyed this one. Good luck with all your radio projects, and we'll see you on the next edition of Solder Smoke. 7-3 from Rome.